Welcome to the Afro Fairy Goddess Podcast, a space dedicated to Afro spirituality from all over the world. Get a good dose of interviews, meditations, and a little bit of my own journey of being Black, spiritual, and magical. I'm your host, the Afro Fairy Goddess from Barbados. Now, on with the show. Hey guys, so this week I get to introduce to you a very dear friend of mine from Jamaica, although currently living in Barbados, Miss Taitu Heron. Taitu is a slasher, a development practitioner, human rights advocate, trainer, facilitator, and performance poet. And she specializes in applied research for advocacy and law reform, project development and community partnerships, intersectional gender analysis, policy development, and rights centered in the Caribbean development policy and planning. Her focus is on gender and vulnerable populations, primarily women, children, youth, and the LGBTQ folk. Right now, Taitu is working at the University of the West Indies Open Campus, where she is the head of the Women and Development Unit of the Consortium for Social Development and Research. If you think that intro was a big one, wait till you hear the interview. Coming up next, Taitu Heron.
Hey guys, welcome to the Afro Fairy Goddess Podcast. And today I'm really happy to finally have my friend from Jamaica, Taitu Heron, here with me. And this has been a long time coming, and I'm very excited for the conversation at hand. What's going on, Taitu?
What's going on? We're there.
So we've had a nice pre-conversation about some of the things we want to talk about today. And this episode I'm very excited about because we actually get to talk about the Caribbean side of African spirituality. And, you know, as a Caribbean person, a lot of my listeners would know and have reached out to me. They would probably know that I'm from Barbados. So to have someone else from the Caribbean here with me to give even like a further perspective, and somebody who is more, I don't want to say older.
She's like my
favorite aunt, or one of my many favorite aunts in the spiritual community. You know, and she has been one of the many who will be here this cycle who I've reached out to, or have reached out to me, throughout this entire pandemic and this past year and a half, giving guidance, giving reassurance. And I hope that those who are listening out there will be, you know, feel at home whilst getting the information from you. But before we even get to that part, let's talk about you, Taitu. You're from Jamaica, yes, but our relationship has grown through African spirituality these couple of years, and it feels like as though I know you longer than what we really have connected with, especially you giving space and being vulnerable with letting me know your African spirituality and connecting with spirits and these different types of things. But how has your life been in between Jamaica and Barbados? Give our listeners a little bit of you.
Okay. Well, I mean, this part of me that we're talking about is different and complementary to my professional side. It's just that the professionally, it doesn't have as much room to express itself. But at the same time, spiritually, those values and the work that I focus on, women and children, and their family members, of course, other family members, form part of the communities, the same, not necessarily the same communities, but I guess you could say the same same people that I work with spiritually or in spiritual circles. So in terms of moving from Barbados to here, where my spiritual practice is concerned and where my spirituality is concerned, it has, at an individual level, I just moved with it because it's been a part of my life since 2004. And I'll tell you a story about that. But in a collective sense, that has taken me a bit longer because you have to try and find out, who is your tribe when you move to a new space?
Yeah.
Who your new spiritual sisters will be?
Yeah.
Who else are you going to work with? And where are you going to anchor yourself in community? Because in terms of following an African-derived spiritual path, it's really all about community, so that has taken a little bit longer. I must say in the last 2 years, it has been more expansive, growing, more comfortable, more confident, more trustworthy, more sacred in terms of the circle of women that I can say I'm a part of, or I can say who I work with. A few men as well, in terms of the Ile that they may belong to, or other Orisha devotees that are also part of the broader Orisha communities in Barbados. Mm-hmm. So that's it in a nutshell. I don't know if there's anything else you'd want to ask me.
Well, not really in terms of that, because knowing you and knowing how vast things have been for you in this short space of time, I'm sure it's going to come out in the follow-up question.
Well, I'll tell you something, though. My interest in Orisha started here in Barbados.
Really?
Yes, because I when I was living here in the first iteration, in 1999 to 2004,
wow.
I was friends with Amanda Cumberbatch. And she was fooling around with it. No, I don't want to say fooling around, but she was dabbling in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I became curious because by that time, I was also doing my own spiritual searching. I didn't really have a spiritual home per se. Mm-hmm. I had left Rastafari some years before that, but I didn't quite have a spiritual home. I was, experimenting with different things, but I didn't really anchor it in anything, so I was in a sense spiritually adrift. And I was teaching a course at the time at Cave Hill called Caribbean Political Systems, and I had to do some research to broaden the curriculum, the course outline, to include a Caribbean political thinker from a non-English speaking country. So I decided to do Jose Marti because I'm fluent in Spanish. So I decided to spend some time in Cuba. So I went to Cuba in 2004 to do on my study and travel, to do the background research, to revise the curriculum. And in moving to Cuba for the 4 months, as it turns out, the professor's house that I stayed at, his wife was an Ifa devotee, an Orisha devotee, and Ianifa, a priestess to Yamoya. Well, my dear, by the time the summer done,
you were there, ready to go.
I was completely there because I had all the little signposts were there based on the friendship that I had developed with Amanda. And I'd started listening to Brazilian music a lot. I was listening to a lot of Ella and Dal, so all the various things were
go to. Right. Song, prayer, yes. Worship, song. Understand. For us devotees.
Understand, correct. So by the time I hit Cuba, and I just, as it turned out, and I think everything was really in alignment where that is concerned, the professor's wife was a priestess, or is a priestess, So it started out very gently at first, I didn't want to be too nosy, and I didn't want to be inquisitive in a very Western kind of way, so I was very gentle and very humble, and then I would ask a couple of questions, and And one day she invited me to a tambour. Mm-hmm. And that's when somebody who has been initiated comes out, is presented afterwards. So I went to the tambour and the Orisha drummers were playing and the lead singer, the Apuan was singing. And I was completely captivated. And there's something that really resonated in my spirit about it, you know. By the time I got back to Barbados and did the work stuff, which was to organize the curriculum and integrate the work, and he's integrating it and teach, include Jose Marti and all of that stuff there, you know, and teach the course. But outside of that, then I started to really read and explore and ask questions. And then I moved back to Jamaica the following year. Mm-hmm. And when I moved back, I bumped into or met up with a few Cubans who had been living in Jamaica. They had moved there to work as nurses or doctors or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they had their own temples and they'll do readings in their Ilays and so on. So I started getting readings. And because I was fluent in Spanish, I continued, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to translate for me. So that made it easier. Mm-hmm. And then I started assisting them if they needed to do readings for Jamaicans and mm-hmm. their English wasn't good enough, mm-hmm. enough, they would ask me to come and help, you mm-hmm. know. So mm-hmm. I started, and it was actually that relationship that got me connected to one Ile in particular in Jamaica, mm-hmm. by Baba Lao Francisco More. Mm-hmm. And so I was through with his Ile for a good while. And then I, you know, received a hand of a ruler in that Ile for a good while. So I was with him in that Ile for a very, very long time. Wow. And I got initiated in 2008, my first initiation. Mm-hmm. And then what happened? A couple of things in between, but I just wanted to, the main part of the story was that Barbados is actually where I started.
That's amazing.
Yeah, full circle. Yeah. And I've come full circle back in Barbados.
Well, I know too, we've had conversations about, you know, you going on either like a walk. And I mean, when I say walk, I mean, you know, the things with Black Lives Matter and Tambourine Army and all these different things that you have been a part of. And you know, fighting for the oppressed communities. But every time we are there, or every time you are there, every now and again, something would happen to you. Or it is like when you told me of when you moved here in Barbados and you went to the gully and you met someone, mm-hmm. or even your encounter with a family member of mine, where you went back to Jamaica. And I've always wondered, how has that been for you and communicating with those spirits that may have passed on? Is it difficult to explain? If something is happening, do you tell somebody? Are people open to you talking about it?
Those are interesting questions. Let me go with the first one. I think when I just started seeing ancestral spirits or feeling ancestral energy and hearing ancestral voices, I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the understanding of what was happening to me. Mm-hmm. The response that was given was that I had mental health problems. Mm. I had depression, you know. But I knew that wasn't it. I couldn't say directly if it wasn't a quote unquote mental health problem based on what I know now. Mm-hmm. But I knew that it was something beyond the Western explanation of it's a mental health issue. Mm. Because I knew that hearing voices, I wasn't going crazy. I was hearing voices. I could write everything down, you know. And I would get really vivid dreams from my ancestors, and I knew it was this aunt, and I knew it was that uncle. Mm-hmm. And us dreaming relatives like that is not new.
Yeah,
that is something
yeah.
that we all have the gift of and all have the capacity to do. It's just that more of us tap into what those dreams mean than others, and more of us take the dreams seriously and take the instructions seriously than others, you know?
Mm.
So it's not, that part to me is really not that unusual. I got clarification when I had a really interesting experience where a spirit had followed me from Kingston to Negril. Me and a friend of mine at the time, we were going to a party in Negril, and her parents didn't really want us to go at the hour that we were going because it was a long drive. This was before the highway was built and cut out a whole hour and a half at the time when we were going. The trip was like 4 or 5 hours long, you know, and we wanted to leave in the evening, which means we would have been driving most of the time in the night. And her parents really didn't want us to do it. I mean, they weren't going to stop us, but they didn't really think it was a good idea. But to cut a long story short, before we left, I saw this image by the gate, you know, and I didn't say anything to anybody, you know, I just kept it to myself. By the time we got to Negril, the same image of the man was there at the gate where we're going to, which was kind of weird. Like, hold on a second, what is he, man, that? And I'm looking around to see if anybody else is seeing what I'm seeing, and I'm realizing my friend is not seeing what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then same thing, I don't say anything to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we got ready and we went to this dance down the road by the beach, this beach bar. The man was there again by a speaker box looking at me. And that is when I said, hold on, this man is not of this era, because nothing about how he had dressed was of the era. It was, this was in early 2000s, right? Not the early 2000s, it would have been in the late 90s, right after I finished my undergraduate degree. And so that is when I realized that, okay, this is definitely off. You know, this was otherworldly. And then I said something to my friend at the time. I said, you see somebody right there by the speaker? She's like, no. So, oh, okay. All right. You know, it's like, so anyway, decided to just ignore it. You know, no need to panic, right? Ignore it. And just, so we have our time, and then we go back to the villa that we were staying, and forgot about it. Well, I didn't really forget about it. I just decided to fold it up and put it in the back of my mind and have a nice weekend with my friends, right? When we get back to Kingston, who you think is waiting for me at the gate of our parents' home? The same man.
So he now realized that you can see him. So now he's like, boy, somebody could see me. Let me follow she and see if she could give my message.
Right. You know, so I at that point, I didn't know what to do. You know, so I said, let me ask her dad, because her dad was an anthropologist, Barry Chavance. So I asked him, and he said it could be Eshoe Legba, based on what I described and based on the fact that every time I saw him, he was at some kind of a pathway or crossing, so to speak, or, you know.
Okay.
And I left that there, and he gave me books to read, which I didn't read. But
do we ever read books that are given to us by our elders? Though it's like, okay, have all the information here.
Years later, you know. But the thing is, I was very suspicious of anthropology.
Okay.
You know, okay. I trusted him. I trusted his instincts, but I didn't like. I was kind of suspicious of anthropology as a disciplinary. An mm-hmm. academic discipline, because its origin is really in the study, the colonial study of the native, you know, in quotation marks, and their culture and their religions and so on and so forth. So I was always a little standoffish with it as a discipline, because I didn't like the approach, and I was uncomfortable with the origin, which I felt affected the methodology of anthropology and the study of people who have different cultural practices from the observer, the anthropological observer, so to speak. So I never bother read the book then. It decides. <Yeah. laughs> So that was the first time. And then couple other incidents afterwards, I kept seeing different energies. I kept seeing different spirits, you know. Mm-hmm. When I was here in Barbados, I saw quite a few. Mm-hmm. And then I started paying attention to how and when I saw them. And it was usually initially on journeys. Mm-hmm. And I just started to be still and listen. And when I realized that they were always there in a weird, they're always there before I started and they're always there when I ended. So it seemed to me that they were protective spirits. Mm-hmm. So when I realized that, okay, they're not there to cause me any harm, they're really protective spirits. Mm-hmm. I just said, okay, cool. Thanks. You know, mm-hmm. and I started acknowledging. I didn't know how to communicate beyond saying to them in my head, thank you. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the language. I didn't have any tools, mm-hmm. but I just accepted it as, okay, that is there, you know?
Okay.
I had a really weird experience here once where I was driving to Martins Bay and I was coming back and it was late in the night and you know how in Barbados, driving late in the night, especially if you don't know where you're going, mm-hmm. is a challenge because of the street lights, the roads yeah, are not yeah, always yeah. well lit,
yeah.
you know? And I was at a crossway on this highway and I can't tell you where I was. I had no clue. I couldn't figure out, should I go left? Should I go right?
Sure.
If I'm going to go left, I'm going to have to go start driving until I see a bus stop so I can figure out if I'm getting back to city or mm-hmm. out to city, right? I just had no clue. I had complete loss of direction. So I just said, sure, let me try. I'm going to just drive to see one bus stop and then I'll know which direction I'm in. Yeah, so I did that. But before I even got to a bus stop, I saw this old man and he was dressed in agricultural type looking clothes, you know, like he worked the land mm-hmm. and he had a hat, a wide brim hat. Like he said, so he looked as if he worked the land, you know, mm-hmm. And it wasn't modern clothes again. You know, he didn't look like a farmer, like a present day farmer, so to speak. The clothes spoke old,
different
ancient
years,
different era. And he looked at me and he took his cutlass and pointed in another direction, in the opposite direction that I was going. So I just looked at him mm-hmm. and mouthed, thank you. And mm-hmm. I turned my car around and I went in the opposite direction. I went to the direction that he led me to. And I got home.
Wow.
Yeah, I got home.
Hey, you're still listening. Thanks for your time. Since you like the show, be sure to give me a 5-star rating and review on Apple. Why? Because it helps get the content out there for others looking for Black spiritual podcasts just like this one. I'm really big into helping my Black community receive the tools and resources they need to uplift them. Thank you for subscribing.
But there's something about Barbados, and I've said so on the podcast numerous times, those day ones who have been listening, there's something about Barbados and our geographical location, it being a mouth for so many who have not been acknowledged. So absolutely. They're just walking around and looking for anybody. They're looking for anybody who will let them give a message to. Like, some of them just want to be heard. They don't want to, quote unquote, mount anybody, or they don't want to haunt anyone. They just don't want to be forgotten because of the horrible atrocities that have happened to them and generational traumas of all forms. And when you said driving at night in Barbados, in the country especially, and you have no idea where you're ending up. I know that story. Many of us here who either live here or who born here know that story, because I was going out somewhere. I think it was with Carol. Maybe I'll have her on the podcast. But Carol Brathwaite, dancer, but very, very intuitive. Yes. She lives in St. John. And there was a night we were just driving around trying to get out of the cane grounds out by her. And we could feel it. Mm-hmm. It is a heavy, heavy energy in the king realm, in the country. I mean, it's everywhere, but there is, it goes deeper in the heavier it becomes. It gets, it's very, very heavy at the mouth, which is in Bridgetown, but it's very heavy in the country. And you can feel it at night.
Yeah.
You can feel our ancestors walking on the ground and running through the king fields. The faster you drive, it's almost as though they're running with us, trying to either escape or catch us. We might not be able to see them, but we definitely can feel them. Some people hear things, you know. I still wonder how country people sometimes, if they miss the last bus. There are people that you meet, well, people, quote unquote, because sometimes they're real people. People that you see on the road in the King Ground just walking.
Yeah.
Walking, going home. And I'm like, aren't you frightened? And people like, no. Like, people have made peace with it. Like, if something come out, it can either come out or it can be not, but I need to get home. And it's like dark. It's dark. They have no street lights. The guy don't car roads, especially if you go to like a party or a fete in the country and you decide to go through a back road to get back to town faster. And there's always, always this random person. One, it's never a group of people. It's never two or three people. It's never a band of people. It don't even be cars. It's this one living, quote unquote, soul on the road in the dark, dead of night, 2 o'clock in the morning, just walking. No fright, no fear, nothing. And it really, I don't know, brings home the idea of how resilient we are as Caribbean people and the stories which I think are not highlighted enough. Like I've said off mic before, like there's a lot of conversation about American spirituality or African American spirituality when it comes to hoodoo and all the different forms that would have, you know, morphed because of geographical location. You may not have this particular plant here, but you may have something over here that works, so it morphs into something else. The situation in Barbados may have been horrific or more monstrous, but it might have gotten a little bit more sullen and more discreet if you go to the south in a way that is not as, it's still nasty, but it's not as barbaric as it was. So now you're pulling it apart to see how deep they can get into your psyche, thinking that you're really free, but you're really not. So then it turns into something else. We really have transformed and transfixed ourselves in many different areas across the world. And I really wish that there was more conversation about all the origins, especially what is steeped here in the Caribbean, all across each island, and how we as Caribbean people and our experience has helped to navigate who we are now as Black people. Do you think that the mainstream idea of African spirituality, I was going to say the word fad, but it is not a fad, but people are making it a fad. It is now, you know, you used to go on Hideway, you used to say that you're going and sitting on your ancestral altar. You would never hear anybody say that. You would never hear anybody say that they're going to do certain things that pertain to Ifa or anything like that. Or, you know, it was done under the guise of Christianity. Do you think that because of this newfound love for what is African spirituality, a lot of people have forgotten the essence of the Caribbean contribution?
I don't know if it is forgotten or if it's that they're just not as, it's a different set of, it's a different constituency that practices it, and they reclaim or they go back to African spirituality for different reasons, even though the angst is the same. In other words, the angst is that, you know, Christian religions and their denominations are not satisfying their spiritual search, or not or not helping them to solve everyday problems. Because really, that's what your spirituality is supposed to help you to do. Not just solve everyday problems, but help you to become your best version of yourself, but also aligned to and anchored to something that's higher and bigger than you, that is divine, but also helps you to express the divine in you in a very outward, social, spiritual, and physical way. So I think all of us are, or a lot of us have been searching outside of Christianity, because Christianity really has not been able to do that in many ways because of the punishing way in which it operates, you know, the punishing and indoctrinal way that it operates. Not all forms, I would imagine, but in a very imperial way, that is the stamp that has been left across the Caribbean and in certain parts of America as well. So I think it's really more of what constituency and why they're seeking it, not understanding its connection in the Caribbean in the sense that we have a strong source here. We have a whole gamut of African-derived religions in the Caribbean, African spiritual paths in the Caribbean.
And indigenous as well.
That's actually the reason why I gravitated more towards Lukumi than, say, Ifa.
Because it's more Caribbean.
Because it's more Caribbean. It's rooted here. Its survival is rooted here. Mm-hmm. It morphed into its own environment in Cuba, in Trinidad, in Brazil, etc. It's here. It came, the source is still from Yoruba, since we're talking about Orisha in particular. But how it evolved in the Caribbean is distinctly Caribbean. And I'm a Caribbean woman first.
Yes.
I'm of African descent, but I'm a Caribbean woman first, you know? And I enjoy being a Caribbean woman rooted in the African heritage in the Caribbean. There's a stage at which I want to go to the motherland and make connect the dots. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I can't wait. For now, you know, that's it. But to add a little bit, you see, the story in America, the experience in America is very different. You know, they are living with something that we don't live with. They are all minorities. We are not. We live here. We have majority consciousness, even though we have colonial baggage that is relatable.
What about minority in terms of power? Because Barbados is real nice for your land here. If it's a black body, wait, we got ringing black people, but hey, 3% of the island white, but who owns the shit?
that's another
question. Who own it? You know what I mean? Yes, that's a whole different podcast.
For sure.
But yes,
but, majority minority. That racialized dynamic, I think, is more insidious in America because it expresses itself in a very brutal way that I think some of us here can actually avoid, you know? So I have to respect that space. Especially when some of us have friends and relatives, you know, in America who live that psychological line warfare. Every day.
It's
spiritual warfare, man. Every single day. So there are ways in which we don't have to live it, but there are other ways in which it definitely reaches us, you know. But I think we can't underestimate having majority consciousness. There is not a day in which we question our blackness in that regard. There's not a way you question that you don't belong in a space, you know. If you question yourself that you don't belong in a space, it's other stuff. There's nothing telling you that you can't become a prime minister or, you know, you can't become a judge or you can't become a writer, you know. you know, there's nothing that says we can't do those things because we have so many examples around us that look like us, you know.
What are your thoughts on, I've heard this conversation before, because I am not an initiate of what people would call the Orisha or the practice, but I've heard conversations of, well, if you're practicing one thing that have the Orisha and it's not, you know, directly from Ifa, you're not practicing true Ifa, you're not practicing true Santeria or true this or true that, because it you did not pick up from Barbados and fly all the way to Nigeria and get to the formal initiations for years upon years upon years to become whatever it is that you're supposed to become.
That is, to me, a certain kind of divisiveness that is actually rooted in a methodology that is Christian.
Okay.
You know, so you may have been a Christian before, but the methodology of your approach to African spirituality is still Christian,
mm-hmm.
which is divide and rule,
mm-hmm.
which is do or die, which is if you don't do it, it's sinful,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, the divine source, Olodumare, mm-hmm. God, whatever, you know, is going to punish you. And, you know, it's not the right way. The only way to do it is you have to be a true Christian. You have to be a true Ifa mm-hmm. devotee. It's the same approach. There's only one way to God. That's Christian. That is Christian in approach. That is not. And it's also a way to divide Black people.
It's hard, you know, because as I run this podcast, I give what I know to help in certain episodes. Sure. You know, you can do candle works. I do a lot of meditation. I'm getting mm-hmm. back into that. I'm posting mm-hmm. it here on the podcast.
Right.
I have two, which was Yameya Oshun, that I did for a couple of friends of mine before. And they're like, oh, you should put this on the podcast. I was like, man, okay. So mm-hmm. hopefully they've been helping. But, you know, most of the podcast conversations are more about my journey, what I see mm-hmm. and what I've experienced, because it's not a lot of documented stuff from the Caribbean. So when I go now and I have an interview with somebody, hopefully I'm asking questions that others would ask as well. So for me and my journey, I'm putting it here on this podcast. Sometimes it gets confusing, especially if you are new to certain things. And you go to one person to get advice on one thing, and then you hear something else that's different. It's kind of parallel, but it's not the same. And you're trying not to offend the spirit. Mm-hmm. So you're not trying to offend the divine. You know what I mean? So it gets confusing because then everybody says, do this, do this, do this. But then everybody turns around and says, trust your Ori, which is your higher self, your intuition. Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's like a muddled...
It doesn't have to be rope, though.
You know what I mean? Like getting all of this.
It doesn't have to be. I think it's really from a matter of what works with you, what makes you comfortable in your spirit, because you have to follow your Ori. Your Ori is your personal Orisha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that in the what I like about the Lokumi practice is that you are encouraged to develop the relationship with your Ori. You are encouraged to listen to your Ori.
Mm-hmm.
That is really where you get to understand the relationship with your higher self.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you do go for a reading, you're not necessarily, you won't be surprised. You already have a sense because your Ori has already led you.
Yeah.
Or when things come up, you can get you pause and you listen to your Ori, will give you the answer right away.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't have to go to no pastor and listen to no, and you don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to go to intermediary. You're already guiding you.
A lot of people, even when I do my own readings, tarot runes, what have you, what I
mm-hmm. what you I do runes?
Yes, I do.
What? I love runes. Listen, we have to have another conversation about
runes. Yes, we do. you see, COVID has
I will show you my rune tattoo one of these days.
Listen, COVID has got me into a space of very much learning, reading books and learning from others. So that was one of the things I notched on my belt during the lockdown. So it was.
Mm-hmm.
But every time you get a reading, and I hope that listeners are in touch with what I'm about to say, whenever you know you get a reading, it's like a confirmation of something that you already knew. So somebody is like one or two little holes of things
mm-hmm.
that will be like, oh, watch out for this or that. But for the most part, you know, whenever I've done a tarot reading and I don't know no information, no background, anything, and I tell people this and this, what this is, what this looks like and thing and thing. And they're like, but I know that, you know, I knew that this and that thing. Yes, one or two things will come up that they're unaware of. And that is because, just as you were talking about intuition, you haven't probably trusted that part of you yet, or maybe you're still in denial about it, but it always comes out in the end. And like you say, your Ori is the most important, or one of the most important things you have to carry with you on this experience on planet Earth. So it is something that needs tending to.
Absolutely.
I wonder why not many conversations or encouragement. Not saying that they haven't, but everybody is very entwined with these beautiful Orisha. People are now starting to understand ancestral veneration as well, which I'm very excited about. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did a podcast on that too, about how to set up a simple altar, or if you are not, if you are not able to put up something as big and elaborate as some people, if you live in a space that is heavily Christian, some people might put it in a shoebox, you know, or have a drawer, a bottom drawer. If you have like a chest of drawers, you can put it in there. Just remember that it is a sacred space and not put nothing else in there. Like there's so many ways to venerate, and don't be ashamed. Don't be ashamed to do it in that way, because the ancestors know. They understand the situation.
And I think the good thing about living now, you know, in this day and age, is that more and more of us are recognizing the importance of the ancestors and ancestral veneration, and recognizing the importance of ancestral trauma and ancestral guidance. Mm-hmm. And therefore, knowing who we are, you have to connect with our ancestors, because there are gaps that need to be filled in understanding who we are that only our ancestors can give us. Mm-hmm. And living your life, some can do that, you know, in a very spiritual way, where somebody else can do it in a very intellectual way, you know, but they're still venerating their ancestors. They can do it in a musical way. They can do it in an artistic way, you know, where their talent comes from, where their inspiration comes from, where their motivation comes from, you know, and it's still ancestral veneration, and they acknowledge that, you know, so I think that is good. And I'm really happy to see that that kind of flourishing is happening more and more. I am wary of the fads, but at the same time, I'm kind of glad, because you have to go to fad first.
Yeah, it got me excited because we never had it taken away.
Right, I have to go to fad first. So let people be excited. Let people think it's fashionable. You know, let people think it's cute. You know, let people think it's sexy, and that's the only good thing about Oshun, for instance, you know, because once you move in that direction, you know, you think they will make you stay there? Hmm. Oh, no. At some point, you'll be tested and you better go deeper. Hmm. They're not going to let you stay there, because once you open that portal, you got to continue going.
I saw a meme online that said, everybody thinks Oshun is so beautiful and sexy and sensual until the day comes and you find out that she likes castrated goat or something like that. That is her offering here. That's she offering. She ain't all just honey.
Right.
She,
not all
she like another type of Cali here. She looks sexy, but don't mess with Oshun. Oshun is you know, the youngest of the Orisha, but she will mess some shit up for you. Understand. And people also need to understand that you need to be careful who you're going to, who you talk to, because yes, I know that there are many babas and iyas out there, but sometimes I've been hearing some really messed up horror stories, you know what I mean?
It's a part of the journey, do you know?
Yeah, and I guess the same way how the Catholic Church got the Pope and got some questionable things happening there, they will have questionable things everywhere, because we're having a human experience.
Ah, shit. That's correct. We're still human beings and we still have our flaws. And I think one of the things I have noticed, you know, Empress, is that when people are experimenting and exploring and trying to find a new path that is African derived. And let's just say they are initiated. Let's say they do the first initiation, receive the hand of a ruler. You know, they call themselves a devotee and so on, and they continue and they do the thing year after year after year. One of the things that I think, there are two things that happen. They are so happy that they have found it, you know? It soothes a part of their spirit that may have not been, we're always complete, but that may have not been clear.
Yeah. You feel at home.
You feel at home in yourself.
Or a form of a home somewhere that you belong to a space somewhere.
Precisely. But it's more than decorating this new home that we belong to.
Yeah.
You know, you have to spend time with your altars. You have to get into the routine. You have to move into your practice. You know, you have to be a part of community. You have to serve.
Hmm.
You know, so they're part, and all of that is part of the journey. Hmm. So it never stops. Hmm. But I think some people may get caught up in the wondrousness of finding, and then don't go any further. Yeah. And then another thing that I've noticed is that some don't really leave the shackles of the Christian methodological approach to worship.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
And to how you treat community. So
can you go a little deeper where that is concerned for those listening?
Just the idea that God is separate from ourselves, especially that God is this person or this entity rather that is so far away, you know, that we don't have any connection to. So, and therefore it has to be done or else this is what is going to happen to you. No. No. There might be consequences so if you have an ebo, you know. So they just the whole so that I find, you know, affects how people approach it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not that let me see if I can articulate it properly. Let me give you a good example. Or for instance, they'll say, like, if you don't live a certain way, you know, you are not an Ifa devotee that has balanced character, you know, Iwakwele. That's true and it's not true at the same time. You are expected to work towards having balanced character. That is your life's journey. You know, but we go off course every now and then because of, you know, circumstances or because of challenges in life. Mm-hmm. But you use the tools that we learn in as an Orisha devotee to help you to approach the challenges and to help you to solve the problems that you have. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if it is, a good example, I think, is sexuality. So, for instance, in Christianity, sexuality is seen as something that is very rigid, that you must be
hidden,
straight as an arrow. And there are all these various restrictions according to women and their bodies and modesty and yada, 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 yada. Whereas in the world of spirit, that doesn't quite exist in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are born first. You know, the spirit is what is really everlasting. You know, this idea that, say, somebody is a lesbian or somebody's gay is condemned and can't find any space, you know, wouldn't hold because you're a spiritual person first, you know? So you have a role and yours is how you manifest your spirit is what matters.
Yeah.
You know, so. Whereas, so to me, that is really a good explanation of the difference. And I wasn't clear on it entirely until I saw how it existed in other places. I was like, oh, okay. The shackles are on us.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, we are all of spirit. So how does that human being who is straight live? What is their spirit like? Them spirit clean? Them live good, they treat people well, they have good relationships. Are they doing their self-work? Mm-hmm. Are they working towards their highest version of themselves? Are they improving their career?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd ask the same question of somebody who is non-binary or who is trans or who is lesbian or who's gay. I'd ask the same question. The spirit is not about the flesh when it comes to spirit. Yeah. It's about your spirit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then if you're always constantly working towards the truest form and expression of your spirit, everything in the physical will unfold as it should. Because it's really your spiritual purpose first. You know, so where the confusion may lie, regardless of where we are on the continuum of sexuality, is because your spirit is not being fed in some form.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're not spiritually, you know, lacking or spiritually you're not looking about your purpose, or spiritually it might be dormant, you know. So those things are not, don't have anything to do with where we are on the spectrum. Those things are literally of spirit, because I think one of the gifts of encountering and reclaiming an African spiritual path is that you shed shame. Because shame, in the way in which we have been socialized, is Afrophobic.
Well, that's our show for this week. If you've listened all the way through and want to connect, join some workshops, or even be on the show, check me on Twitter and Patreon under the handle The Afro Fairy Goddess. You can check out the website also at theafrofairygoddess.com, or if you want to drop me a line, email me directly at theafrofairygoddesspodcast@gmail.com. I am the Afro Fairy Goddess, and as always, don't forget to believe in your magic.